Mini episode 337 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by Sportsology, delivering unconventional columns and webcasts about sports, TV, music, movies, and more. Follow them on the web at sportsology.info.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Welcome to FDH Lounge, mini episode number 337. This is FDH managing partner Rick Morris, bringing back on the program a gentleman who was on with us for mini episode number 336. Kind enough to come back on very shortly thereafter the last appearance. There were some phone issues at the end that unfortunately terminated our conversation in an untimely manner. But again, as was the case, 30 great minutes out of him. So he would have been justified if he wanted to point to that alone and say, hey, we already had a great conversation here. For him to offer to come back on so quickly with us to resume and to talk a little bit more is really, really above and beyond, and we appreciate so much the chance to be able to bring him back in. Mickey Thomas of Starship. Mickey, welcome back to the show, my friend. Glad you're able to come back in after only a couple of days away.
Well, thanks a lot, Rick. It's good to be back.
It's a real pleasure to be able to pick up where we left off. I believe we were starting to get into what the set list might be on an average night. We were talking about, again, everything with the new album, everything that had gone into it with some of the 70s and 80s elements, and of course the biggest heyday of Jefferson Starship being when you were in there in the 1980s. So when you're looking at the songs from that set list that people are going to expect to hear, the new stuff, things that you've done in between, on a given night, and I understand that no two nights are probably the same, much like snowflakes here, but a given night on the road, what are people likely to be able to expect from your Starship lineup?
Well, you know, you are correct. I mean, we try to keep it fresh and leave windows of opportunity in the show for spontaneous things to happen, you know. But also, you know, there are certain songs that just is going to have to be in the set every night because I don't want the audience to walk away disappointed. And so, you know, the staples are the obvious ones, like We Built This City on Rock and Roll and Sarah and Nothing's Going to Stop Us Now, and Jane, Find Your Way Back, No Way Out. I always include Fooled Around and Fell in Love from the Elvin Bishop Band days because, you know, that was my first, you know, big hit, and still sometimes when I go into that during the live show, it always surprises at least a few people in the audience are like, oh, wow, I didn't know he did that. So I do Fooled Around, and then we are, and then some of the ones that we might interchange on a nightly basis, we do Stranger quite often, Winds of Change, It's Not Enough, Set the Night to Music, Rock Music, and then we are incorporating some of the new songs in the set. The ones that have been going over the best live are the title track, Loveless Fascination, and then the tracks, It's Not the Same as Love, and Technicolor Black and White. And, oh, yeah, I almost forgot to mention that also, usually around towards the middle of the show, Stephanie, my female vocalist, and I do a musical tribute to the history of Starship, you know, everything that's gone on before. So Stephanie goes back and does Somebody to Love and White Rabbit, and then I do a couple of the real early Jefferson Starship hits like Miracles and Count on Me, and we incorporate that into the form of a medley in the middle of the show as homage to the history of the band. And then sometimes we do something completely unexpected. Like the last show we did, just for the moment, we decided to go in the House of the Rising Sun.
Awesome. Yeah, so you never know what's going to be worked in. And that's a nice touch, too, with being able to work in some of the Grace Slick-type stylings in there as well, to be able to touch on some of the history of the band from before you came along and from when you two were kind of duetting with the vocals in the 80s. That's a very, very nice touch on your part to include that.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, you know, it's a strong history. I mean, it's a strong part of what the band is all about. And it's you know, works out. It's perfectly natural. It feels quite, you know, right at home for us to do that. And the fans certainly appreciate it, you know.
Well, as far as other types of music that you might play from time to time, other songs that might be worked in, I can't help but feel as I'm looking at, I'm checking out the website here at starshipcontrol.com and checking out the news section here, might be a little bit of mixing going on here. This, I find this very fascinating, this New Zealand summer tour you've got planned for early 2014 with Leonard Skinner going to be joining you, British group 30cc. How did that come about? That seems like a very fascinating combination.
Yeah, it is an interesting combination, isn't it? And that is going to be in February of 2014, which I guess would be the middle of summer down under, wouldn't it?
Yep.
In New Zealand. So it will
be
summer
hot.
Tour in New Zealand, but it'll be February for us. But, you know, we just got the offer from, you know, my agency called me up and said, hey, we got this offer for this. And I said, that sounds awesome. You know, I mean, Leonard Skinner, I mentioned, you know, Fooled Around and Fell in Love and from the Elvin Bishop Band. And back when I was in Elvin's band in the mid to late 70s, we used to tour quite extensively with Leonard Skinner all those years ago with their original lineup. So it's like coming full circle again. And then as you mentioned, also 10cc is going to be on the show. And so it's kind of an odd mix, but I think it's something that will hopefully is going to work out. And, obviously for us and Skinner, you know, it's not maybe quite as much of a stretch as it is to have 10cc in the mix as well. But I'm really looking forward to it. I've been to Australia, but I've never been to New Zealand, so this will be a first for us.
Well, that should be fun, just getting to check out that part of the world and everything with Skinner. I didn't know that you had toured with them previously. I've always been a huge Skinner guy. That's got to be very, very interesting. You talk about going full circle all these years later, playing bills with them down in New Zealand. Have you been in regular communication with some of the surviving guys over the years?
No, not really. Not with Skinner. You know, I do keep in real close contact with, you know, some of the guys from 38 Special, which were kind of the same ilk that we also did a lot of shows with back in the day. You know, Skinner may only have one original member, I think, now, that's still touring in the band. And I believe that Johnny Van Zant is singing with them now. And I do know Johnny. I've done a couple of things with Johnny in the last few years, a couple of special events and things of that nature. So, looking forward to it.
Oh, that's got to be a really interesting thing. That's going to be a complete treat for the folks down in New Zealand to be able to check that out. As far as the before and after that, I would imagine there's got to be a lot of domestic touring for the new album as well, Loveless Fascination, correct?
Oh, yes, there will be a lot of that as usual. You know, like I say, we're constantly on tour these days. It's just that we don't, you know, stay out for 6 months straight or whatever. We always break it up, you know, a few days out, a few days home, a few days back out. So we'll be doing that, business as usual, in 2014, but as well as New Zealand, and hopefully we'll be able to add some Australian dates on that as well. But we're also looking to, behind the new album, you know, with the release of Loveless Fascination, also cover many other parts of the world in 2014, too, especially Europe. It's been many, many years since we've really done any serious touring in Europe, so I'm sure we're going to work some of that into the summer of 2014 as well.
Well, I'll no doubt be looking forward to that, especially if it's been, as you said, many years since you've gotten a chance to go over there and expose those fans to a chance to hear it live. When you're at this stage of the game here, you've got the album, it's been out for a little bit now, you've got the tour anticipated, and as you said, going in through next year, is it a little bit early at this stage to start thinking beyond that, what the next project might be, what the next thing might look like? I'm just curious, in kind of a macro sense here, when those ideas kind of pop into your head. Is that something that happens kind of later in the tour when you're thinking what comes next, or how does that generally play out for you?
Yeah, well, that will probably come a little bit later. Hopefully it won't be as long as 20 years in between albums. But the plan right now, the immediate future is right from the get-go, we plan to this is going to be a kind of a slow process of working this album in the initial stages. And we've set aside, we've planned out 6 months to kind of work the new album and try to bring exposure to it and, you know, get people to hear it and hopefully, you know, go and buy it because, you know, it's not like it was for us, you know, 25 years ago where we had put out a new album, we put out a single, and it just instantly is going to get a lot of radio exposure, and people are going to be exposed to the album through that process. You know, now we don't have that luxury, so it's a slower process of trying to educate the public or making the public aware of the new album through touring and through doing what you and I are doing right now, you know, talking about it and through social media and all those avenues. So we'll be working the record for at least 6 months, and then, you know, obviously touring 2014, and probably towards the end of 2014, I'll sit down and start seriously planning the next Starship album.
Well, it'll be interesting to see what permutations that might take and what pops into your head between now and then to kind of shape it. That will be a very intriguing thing, no doubt. One of the things we've talked about, one of the elements, has been with your interaction with all of these great musical figures over a period of time, both the ones in your band over the years and some of the other guys that you've gotten a chance to jam with, open for, etc. Just wondering what your thoughts are around this time of year when the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame nominations come out and there's always conjecture about who's going to be in the next year's class. No doubt a guy like you that's in the business, that's played with a lot of these guys, that knows a lot of these guys that are up for it, has some thoughts on this. So any thoughts in your head about the class of 2014 and what you'd like to see happen?
Well, you know, I'm kind of surprised that Kiss is not in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Right.
You know, I'm not personally like a big Kiss fan, but you know, I mean, come on. I mean, you know, they were a pretty significant force in rock and roll, very unique and groundbreaking and very popular, and they pretty much invented the whole rock and roll merchandise arena. And so it's surprising to me that they're not in. Van Halen's not in either, are they?
I don't believe so.
That's another one that's kind of surprising. You know, I think Van Halen should definitely be there. You know, because now, too, because, I mean, it's not like, I mean, there's so many great artists. I'm not saying that anyone who's in there doesn't deserve to be in there. But sometimes now it looks to me like they're kind of stretching a little bit on some of the people that they're putting in there. And while at the same time missing some of the obvious choices, like a couple that we just mentioned.
Oh, no question about it. And I know for the likes of myself and past guest of our show, Eddie Trunk, one of the biggest sticks in our craw over the years that he and I had that in common was the fact that Rush wasn't in until last year. So, you know, eventually it seems like they get around to rectifying these things, and perhaps they will with Kiss one of these days. But, yeah, it really is kind of puzzling. And as you said, I understand you not wanting to take a run at anybody that's in there, and I know that's what you weren't doing. But the fact that it gets into the definition, it seems like, of the genre, of how we define what is rock and roll, and, oh, this was an influence on it, even if it's not exactly considered that. That seems to be accounting for some of the anomalies, doesn't it?
Well, yeah, it does. You know, especially in recent years, you know, they have really delved more into the area of rhythm and blues artists and blues artists. And of course, you know, rock and roll is pretty much derived from blues and from rhythm and blues, but there are separate institutions that honor those artists as well. You know, there's a Blues Hall of Fame, and so, yeah, it's like sometimes the lines get blurred kind of and obscured there about, okay, what really constitutes the kind of act, the kind of artist that we're going to put into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Absolutely, and because there is no central universal standard that it seems like they're using, that's what accounts for the confusion, it really seems like, but so this album that you've got on now, this long-awaited CD, Loveless Fascination with Starship, again, it was a pleasure to be able to get into that and talk about it with you and break it down as we did in part one of our conversation and to be able to get into a little bit more of your tour and what that's like. Anything that we didn't really hit sufficiently that you'd like to get out there, Mickey?
You know, a couple of things that I'm involved in right now. We are, you know, I put a solo album out last year called Marauder, which I'm really proud of and real pleased with, and it's the most fun that I've ever had on working on a project in the studio. It's all cover stuff, and I did everything from the Beatles and the Stones to Peter Gabriel to Bob Seger to Oasis and Muse and Snow Patrol, and so I had just a lot of fun with that. And it's a real fun party record because they're all great songs by great artists and just kind of my interpretation of a lot of cool songs. So Marauder's definitely worth checking out. You know, I have been delving back into the blues a little bit more in the last couple of years. I did an album called Blues Masters featuring Mickey Thomas, and that has allowed me the opportunity to reacquaint myself with Elvin Bishop. We've been doing a lot of special projects together over the last couple of years, and I'm going to be a guest artist on Elvin's new album. In a couple of weeks, I'm going up to San Francisco to sing a couple of tracks with him on that. And, you know, all the touring in 2014 behind Loveless Fascination that Starship's going to be doing, and the New Zealand thing, we're doing a cruise in April called the Moody Cruise with the Moody Blues. That's going to be a lot of fun. So we got a full plate.
Really sounds like it, and what an eclectic mix there, and particularly that Marauder album. So much stuff on the one album. I'm just curious. I just want to follow up on that for a second here. What made the cut?
Yeah.
When you're talking about what gets, you know, you're playing songs from Oasis and some of these guys out there. What ends up making and Snow Patrol? What ends up making the cut in your mind? What was that process like when you were narrowing that down?
Well, that was tough. It was tough to narrow that down because my producer, Jeff Tamalier, who produced the album, who's a longtime friend and old bandmate of mine, we went through a lengthy process of I would bring in songs, he would bring in songs. The guy who was executive producer on the project would offer some suggestions as well. So, it was hard to decide which ones were going to make the cut. You know, I tried, for me, it kind of started out, there's a heavy Beatles influence on Marauder because obviously that was my initial influence that kind of got me started doing this in the first place. So there's three or four Beatle tunes. I did Give Me Shelter by the Stones, and I just love a lot of the new bands like Oasis and Muse, and so I, you know, I wanted to include some of that stuff, so I did that. And one of the songs that wasn't going to make the cut for me, I did Life is a Highway, and I felt that the way that we cut it, that we recorded the track too fast, and it just didn't feel good to me, and I wasn't happy with it. And I said, you know, I think we need to leave that one off. And my producer, Jeff, felt real strongly about the track. He really loved that song. So he said, no, man, it's cool. What can I do? What can I do to keep that one on the album? So at the spur of the moment, I thought of the most off-the-wall thing I could possibly think of. I said, well, if I can do it as a duet with a rap artist, we'll keep it on the album. and he just said, okay. He said, I know a guy. He knew we were recording this in Sacramento, California, and he knew a local rap artist in Sacramento, called him up that night, had him come down and do his rap parts on it. And I said, all right, well, you did your part, so we got to put it on the record now. But it really obviously took it to a completely different place and added a very unique quality to that cut.
I would say so. That's a heck of a story there. You throw a demand out like that and it can be met. That's he called that bluff. Well, that is tremendous. People should definitely go check that out. And I'll tell you, Mickey, I certainly hope over a period of time here, much like with your good friend Jimmy Jameson, I'm going to be keeping up with your career. Hopefully love to have you back on, as Jimmy has done from time to time here, and keep up with things as they're transpiring. We'd love to do that with you.
Man, anytime. I'd love to talk to you anytime. I really enjoyed it, and it's great having these kinds of conversations where we can really, you know, kind of dig a little deeper into things and have a real conversation.
Thank you so much. That's what we try to do on this show. It's great to be able to get the validation when somebody like yourself enjoys it as much as we do. And it was just really great to be able to dig on this with you and get to the heart of all of these different things that you've got going on and have had going on. And wish you all the very best with your career, Mickey. And like I said, look forward to keeping up with you in the future.
Thanks very much, man. We will do it.
Thank you. Really appreciate it. Thank you all for tuning in, everybody. The FDH Lounge mini episode number 337.
As we bring the show to a close, we would like to extend our deepest gratitude to NBC, CBS, ABC, Fox, all Clear Channel affiliates, TNT, TBS, USA, UPN, Deadspin.com, YouTube.com, YTMND.com, MySpace.com, various blogs, Fox News, CNN, CNBC, MSNBC, IamBored.com, Billboard.com, Google.com, ESPN, ESPN2, ESPN News, ESPN Classic, NBA TV, NFL Network, Sports Time Ohio, Athlon Magazine, Comedy Central, Cartoon Network, The Boomerang Channel, QVC, BET, The Spice Channel, Steno Notebooks, Manwich, Papermate Office Supplies, Waitresses, Strippers, Bartenders, Garbage Men, Janitors, Microwave Popcorn, The Writers of The Office, Scrubs, Entourage, My Name is Earl, Oz, Metalocalypse and the Boondocks, Awkwafina, and The Periodic Table of Elements.